Support for WPR comes from WIPS with Toward One Wisconsin, a conference on equity, diversity, and inclusion, May 7th and 8th in Eau Claire. Registration information and more is at t1w.org.
So happy to have you along here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Larry Mueller here. Glad to have you with us today. We will begin our program pretty quickly here on canoeing, kayaking, and outdoor adventuring with Darren Bush, co-owner of Rutabaga, the world's largest paddle sport shop in the world. He hasn't arrived yet. You know what? He's probably had some problems with traffic because there is lots of road work being done all around Wisconsin Public Radio. It's like, how can you even get here? We can't get here from there. That's sort of the common complaint. So I'm sure he'll be along pretty soon because I want to talk with him about, oh, lots of things. You know, the majority of canoe and kayak products are made using petroleum. I wonder what's new and green there. So we'll deal with that a little bit later on as we visit with him and talk about some other things like fishing and canoeing and kayaking. There's some increased interest in that. So we're going to be talking with him about that as well. And then, as I mentioned later on, we'll be talking with Joe Rhodes, self-employed Macintosh support specialist in Madison, who is going to be talking with us about Macintosh computers and accessories. So we'll look forward to that. Just to take a look ahead to what's going on during the week here, on Tuesday, Ruby West Jackson and Walter McDonald will be with us, and they've written an interesting, kind of a fascinating book about Joshua Glover and the Underground Railroad. I had a chance to read the book. I just finished it up last week, as a matter of fact, and it's a fascinating story about a guy who, Joshua Glover, who escaped from slavery and then sort of made his way to Wisconsin. And actually was sort of settled down a little bit, but then was recaptured temporarily in Milwaukee. And there was quite a large contingent of Milwaukee people who sort of rioted and got him out of there and got him away and up to Canada. And there was a long, oh, man, I don't remember how many years now, several years of litigation that involved the whole business, because at the time a slave owner could legally supposedly come and get a former slave or one that had escaped to a free state like Wisconsin was, and there was some significant legislation that resulted from the whole business that occurred here in Wisconsin. So I'm really looking forward to that and talking with those two guests tomorrow on the show. And Glenn Lloyd of Wisconsin Department of Agriculture, Trade, and Consumer Protection will be our guest also tomorrow, and he'll be talking about all the consumer scams that are going on. I'm sure this time of the year we almost always get a lot in the area of, itinerant repair crews coming around. And so we'll be looking forward to hearing what he's got to say about that. We've also spent some time this month talking about invasives, and we're going to be continuing that on Wednesday's program. Wednesday, last week we talked about invasive weeds. And this week we're going to, on dry land, and this week we're going to be talking about invasive aquatics. And we've got Julia Solomon of the Department of Natural Resources and UW Extension. And Phil Moy of the Sea Grant Program will come by. That'll be on Wednesday to talk with us about invasive aquatics. And then on Wednesday as well, Rod Kroonen, Wisconsin's Commissioner of Railroads, will be stopping by. And he will be talking with us about rail safety issues. So we'll look forward to hearing from Uncle Rodney, as a lot of people call him. He's done, I think, a lot of good for the rail programs, especially rail safety. I was reading in the Capital Times the other day that Wisconsin has drastically, under his tenure, drastically reduced the number of rail accidents. And I think a lot of that we can attribute to Rod Kroonen's work. And so it'll be fun. And doesn't the guy know a lot? I mean, it's amazing to me. Someone will call in with a street or a town road, and he'll be able to describe it. And no matter where it is in Wisconsin, it always amazes me. So he's on Wednesday as well. And then we'll be taking a look. You know, this time of the year, I've been thinking a lot about this, and my wife has been thinking a lot about this as well, because summertime is here, and we've got lots of activities that we'd like to have Emily, our young daughter, do. She's going to be 4 on September 1st. Michelle Van Leeuwen will be talking about activities for children. That'll be on Thursday's program. So I'm kind of looking forward to that. I can learn a few things, too. And maybe you've got some youngsters around your home that you'd like to know some more about what they can do this summer. Or maybe some grandchildren are coming to visit or whatever. So we'll look at that on Thursday. And then Thursday, right after the 11 o'clock portion, 11:45, Rick Seney of faircompare.com will be our guest. And, you know, this will be his first foray into Wisconsin Public Radio. And we've had some interest in actually doing some programs that relate to what are the good fares, airfares out there. And Rick has got a pretty nice program going, I think, here at faircompare.com. So we're going to try him out and see how he works out. So we'll look forward to that on Thursday. And then, on Friday, we've got a regular trio of guests coming on Friday for our next edition of Garden Talk. Terrell Roper, Dan Marr, and Patty McManus. And I'll tell you what, what they don't know isn't worth knowing, I think, when it comes to fruit trees. And so, one of them handles sort of the planting and the growing, and another one is more concerned about the insects, and the other one is concerned about the pathogens that are out there that that can hurt our fruit trees. So we'll be visiting about fruit trees on Friday on that edition of Garden Talk. So we'll look forward to that. And just to go ahead a little bit further, I'm giving you the whole rundown here as we wait for Darren Bush to arrive. A week from today, let me think here now. Oh, I know. What color is your parachute retirement? John Melson is going to be our guest on Monday, and I've had a chance. He has a book out. It's in that What Color is Your Parachute series of books, and this one has to do with retirement. I haven't gotten through the whole book yet. I'll have it finished by the time next Monday rolls around. But some interesting things to consider, no matter what stage you're in. Frankly, if you're a young person and thinking about retirement, there's suggestions in there for you. If you're sort of halfway along to that that golden retirement age, you've got some good advice. And if you're right on the edge, or maybe you're just retired, frankly, there's even some pretty good advice for you in there. I've already found reading through probably the first third of the book. So it's something, it's a book I think that any of us would be well advised to take a look at. And that's What Color is Your Parachute Retirement? And then, let's see, we got our weather guys then in the right after that, because it'll be the last Monday of the month. John Martin and we'll be along, and Steve will be along as well. So we'll do that. We'll do the What Color is Your Weather Parachute with them on the first Monday, the last Monday of the month. And then finally, we'll take a look at Green Building with Sherry Gruder and Lou Host Jablonski. They haven't been on for quite a while. We've had some programs on green building, but I tell you what, we haven't talked about it with them in quite a long period of time. So we'll be dealing with that. Then we'll be taking a look at dental care with Lowell Lakritz. Dr. Lowell Lakritz will be along, so we'll be taking a look at that with him as well. And Darren must have run into some real difficulties here. I'll tell you what, we'll do. I've given you quite a few program ideas, and if he may or may not be showing up yet, he might also be riding up and down on our elevator. You never know, because the elevator here at Wisconsin Public Radio goes up 7 floors, but sometimes it goes up and down, and no matter what button you push, it won't stop. So he might be riding up and down in the elevator. We don't know. Tell you what, though, if you've got some ideas for programs, let's do that for a little while until we get Darren here. The number to call, 1-800-642-1234, or if you're in the Madison area, at 263-1890, 263-1890. Give us a call with your program ideas, and we'll see what we can do for you on that. Let's take a quick look at what's coming up in the afternoon here just today. We've got Chapter of Day, of course, at 12:30 with Norm Gilliland reading from Thunderstruck by Eric Larson. Then at 1, Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And then at 2, kind of an interesting show. Google isn't just a giant corporation. It's also a verb and been used as a verb for a while now. And we hear it on our program, although I've been kind of criticized for doing that, and I've stayed away from saying just Google it and find out, but a lot of people do say that. But with new 3D images of people's homes and access to all sorts of personal data, many users are worried about privacy. So privacy is going to be a concern at 2 o'clock on Talk of the Nation. And I do want to mention as well, here on Earth, Radio Without Borders, because Al Gore will be on to talk about his new book. Gene Faraca will be visiting with him about his book, The Assault on Reason. And there'll be some commentary as well from John Nichols. And let's take a few program ideas while we're at it here. Gene in Oshkosh, thanks for calling. Hi.
Hi, Larry. Love to hear you, Phil, that dead time.
Yeah, it's 10-15 minutes is a long time to fill with off the top of your head.
I was empathizing with you. I do have a suggestion. We have for years now talked about going to the Energy Fair in Custer.
Yep.
And it was on this last weekend, and for various reasons, we, again, just never got there. And I guess what I'm suggesting is that I'm sure that there are principals involved here, coordinators and managers of that operation that would love to talk about the evolution of that fair and certainly the new techniques that have been brought to the fore this year. And why not? And I think this is something that's fresh on people's minds. If you could make a contact with the people who ran that operation, it seems to me you could get someone relatively quickly who would, if you will, fill in the blanks, because it's one thing to talk about the fair. It's quite another to know whether are they just selling things, are they giving lectures, what's the cost, how many days do you really need to do it to do the whole thing. So there's a rich soil there that could be tilled.
I like the metaphor. Thanks, Gene.
You're welcome.
Appreciate the call very much. We will go to Mary next. Let's go to Mary. Hi, Mary.
Hello. Yes, I was wondering if you could have a program on pre-settlement Native American trading, what items were traded, and whom the Native Americans traded with.
That's interesting. I have actually within my Department of Life Sciences Communication, I have a couple of faculty members who are also Native Americans, and I can talk with them and see what we can come up with. They may have some good, they probably, because of what they cover, they may not have that information in hand, but they probably would also know who might be available to talk about something like that. Thanks, Mary.
Thank you.
Appreciate it. And Rob in Madison. Hi, Rob.
Hi. Thanks for having me on.
Sure.
I have an interest in kind of like social problems, and public radio is good at reporting kind of events that happen within the news. And I'm interested in a program that talks about kind of like the systemic level or the cause of problems. And what I'm implying is I'm a student, and I've kind of come to the realization that capitalism as itself is kind of a systemic problem. And I was just I want to encourage you to have a guest that talks about this as kind of an issue within our society.
Hmm. Interesting. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
We'll see what we can do about that. We will go to Carl in Iola next. Carl, hi to you. Thanks for calling.
Good morning. I would like to suggest a show about personal or residential.
Oh, I missed Carl. I missed. Sorry, you blacked out there for a second. What? I repeat what you were saying. Oh, shucks. Tell you what, we lost you, Carl. I'm sorry. We're hoping to hear from Darren Bush of Rutabaga. He hasn't arrived yet, so what we're doing is we're taking program suggestions, and then we'll be visiting about computers and Macintosh computers specifically with Joe Rhodes, who's a self-employed Macintosh support specialist in Madison, and will be our guest coming up in a little bit here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Larry Mueller here. Glad to have you along today. And I tell you what, I think we may have Darren online. We do have Darren Bush online. Darren, are you there?
I'm here.
All right. Good to hear your voice.
You too. Thank you.
Tell you what, we were just talking earlier about the fact that Margaret Bogue was going to be on the show to talk about Lake Superior and all of the different things you can see at Lake Superior, around Lake Superior. Have you done any canoeing on Lake Superior or kayaking yourself?
Kayaking, yes. Canoeing, no. It's kind of a big body of water for a canoe. I know some people have done it. But I've done a little bit of kayaking, usually around the Bayfield area, the Apostle Islands. I've paddled some on the North Shore. And then over on the Canadian side, over by a little town called Rossport. It's just a gorgeous, if you go straight north from here, you run into Rossport. It's a very, very northern part of the lake.
And it's a beautiful place to kayak.
It looks kind of like New England. It's actually really, it's really interesting. There's the topography there is, it's very rugged Canadian shield topography. And, but there's lots of small little islands, little archipelagos you can poke in and out of. And there's some beautiful shipwrecks up there as well. It's a lovely place.
Canoeing, kayaking, and outdoor adventuring, our topic here with Darren Bush, co-owner of Rutabaga, the largest paddle sports shop in the world. Glad to have him along. And certainly if you have a question about canoeing or kayaking, outdoor adventuring, or maybe you've got a special place that you would like to mention that where you go, feel free to join in. Here's the number, 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, or if you're in Madison, reach us at 263-1890, 263-1890. You know, the majority, I guess, of canoe and kayak products are made using petroleum. Darren, what's new and green in paddle sports?
Oh, there's some really cool new processes that are coming along nicely. And you're right, petroleum products are used for pretty much all the manufacturing processes, from polyethylene up to composites. There's the energy inputs are really the part that makes a big difference in what it takes to make a boat. And ironically, it may take more petroleum to ship a boat from the factory to the end user than it takes to make the boat itself. So, and I always tell people, look, you drive into the boundary waters, you'll use as much petroleum driving up and back as you do to make the boat. But that said, we try and minimize our footprint as best we can. So the polycarbonate alloys that are vacuum formed are really good because you can use a minimal amount of heat to get them to the point where you can form them and then cut them out and put them together. That's one way to go green. Also, the waste is minimized using that process. But I still think the best process is a composite process because you can minimize really how much energy goes into product that you don't use, that you throw away.
Yeah, true. Scott in Boscobel, we'll give you a chance. Hi, Scott.
Hey, how you doing, guys?
Great. Thanks for calling.
Excellent. Well, Darren and I know each other, and I have to call NPR, apparently, to get a hold of him. I own Wisconsin River Outings, a canoe rental that's both in Sauk City and Boscobel. And in addition to a great paddle sports shop, Darren is also highly involved in paddle sports associations, and I wanted to thank him for his help and assistance in doing that also. You know, we live in an outstanding paddle area in the country, possibly the world, and we just need to get more people on the water.
Well, Darren, what do you think?
Oh, shucks. thanks, guys. Yeah, I try and fly under the radar as best I can. I'm intrinsically a shy person, So, but thanks for the kind words.
Thank you. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks a lot for calling, Scott. Appreciate it. How many, you know, Scott said we need to get more people out on the water in this fashion, kayaking and canoeing. We have any idea how many we have in Wisconsin?
In Wisconsin, no. The national numbers are pretty compelling. It's in the tens of millions of people who paddle every year at least once. The difference is a lot of those people are not enthusiasts, they're participants.
Yeah.
And, I mean, they paddle like I play golf, right? If someone puts a gun to my head and says, we need to go golfing, I'll find an excuse to go and hit a ball around. But I wouldn't call myself a golfer because that would be an insult to all those who are. But I enjoy the activity, you know, once in a while. But the difference is there's no green fees for paddling.
Yeah, that's right.
You know, once you buy the boat, you're done.
Yep, that's exactly right, and it's great exercise. Probably better exercise than I play a lot of golf too. It's probably better exercise than golf too.
I don't know. It depends if you have a cart or not. You know.
Yeah, I guess if you walk it, probably about six of one, half a dozen of the other.
Sure.
You write in the Canoecopia Gazette about an increasing interest in tying fishing to canoeing and kayaking. Comment on that a little bit.
Yeah, actually, yeah, there's a huge influx of people into the sport who are already anglers. It's not so much paddlers that are becoming anglers, it's anglers that are becoming paddlers. And what we're finding is that manufacturers have found the kayak, especially a small recreational kayak, is an excellent platform from which to catch fish because you can go places you can't normally go. You know, the amount of water you need to float a kayak is minimal, you know, inches. And a friend of mine is a pretty hardcore kayak fisherman who, you know, I asked him a couple days ago, what's the biggest fish you ever caught out of a kayak? And he said, oh, I think it was about a 15-pound brown trout up by Sheboygan. And it's becoming more and more common that people use this craft, mostly because the cost of gasoline, you know, to run a regular old fishing boat is becoming kind of high.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. There are, I'm pretty sure, kayaks and canoes that are sort of set up specifically for fishing, or can you just get by with any of them?
Well, you can make any canoe or kayak a fishing canoe or kayak, and people have been doing that for years by adding things like rod holders, anchors, you know, a place to put your tackle. But a lot of manufacturers, manufacturers have decided that they're going to set boats up already ready to go for fishing with rod holders already installed, with a, you know, GPS mount already installed, with a fish finder even already installed. And they're about, you know, they're a little more expensive. It's 25 to 30% more expensive than a regular kayak, but all the work's done already. So if you just want to, you know, get and go, you can just get an angler model and get on the water.
Yeah. Spence in Campbellsport, let's go to you next. Hi, Spence.
Hi. Thanks for taking the call.
Sure.
Hey, we're planning on taking a trip up to the Apostle Islands this weekend and also to stop over in Mercer. But I was going to introduce my grandson to kayaking, and I was wondering what is the best way to do that? Is it just to rent a kayak, get some professional help, or what would you recommend?
How old's your grandson?
He's almost 14.
Oh, boy.
13-year-old. Okay.
Yeah, be careful. It's kind of addicting. it depends on the child. It depends on, you know, if they're already interested in being outside and on the water. It's a pretty natural progression. I would not recommend a tandem just because that takes some of the joy out of paddling. If it's the only thing you can do because you're on big water, that's better than not paddling at all. But a lot of kids respond to the idea of being captain of their own ship, so to speak. Mm-hmm. So I would, you know, make sure you find equipment that fits them. A lot of kids end up in stuff that's too big, with paddles that are too big and PFDs that are too big and not comfortable, and they end up not having a good time. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I mean, a little instruction doesn't hurt, and I'd keep the trip short to start with.
Okay, yeah. We have been canoeing, so is that a comparable situation or?
Yeah, people who like to be outside on the water like to be outside on the water. So, you know, it's kind of a religious discussion. My son loves canoeing. My daughter loves kayaking. They both do both, but they just kind of were drawn to those different activities depending on their individual natures.
From what we observed on the TV and so forth, do kayaks have a tendency to tip more or?
No. The media has done a really bad job of portraying kayaking as it really is. It's seen as hardcore and extreme. It's not. Most kayaks are a lot more stable than even some canoes, depending on how they're set up. But mm-hmm. No, they don't. You don't have to learn how to Eskimo roll. You don't have to know anything really. Just get in and go.
And in the state of Wisconsin, is everyone required to wear a life vest for kayaking? And
I'll say yes.
Okay.
It's not true, but I'll say yes anyway. I think they're required to have a PFD with them, especially depending on the type of PFD. You're required to have one with you, not necessarily to wear it, although I tell people if your PFD is not comfortable enough to wear all the time, you probably have the wrong kind of PFD.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Well, thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks very much for calling. Appreciate your call. You can join in, too. We're talking canoeing, kayaking, and outdoor adventuring with Darren Bush, co-owner of Rutabaga, the world's largest paddle sports shop. Pleased to have him along. And again, the number to call, 1-800-642-1234. Or if you're in Madison, reach us at 263-1890, 263-1890. Give us a call with your questions and comments. We'd love to have you on the air. If I'm a first-time kayaker, let's take that a little further, take that last call a little further before we go back to the phones. What are the questions I should ask myself if I'm going to set myself up with a kayak?
The things I always ask customers and people who are interested in learning how to paddle is, where do you really want to go? What do you see yourself doing? It's not unlike buying a car. It's like, so what do you see yourself doing with this automobile, right? You're going to drive around, haul stuff, you're going to go off-road, all those things that it's all about use. So with a canoe or a kayak, it's like, so what kind of bodies of water are you going to find yourself on? You're going to paddle small rivers and streams? You're going to paddle big lakes? What activities are you going to do in your boat? Are you going to fish? You're going to hunt? You're going to look through binoculars at birds? You're going to, it just depends on what you want to do. And then, how big are you? How comfortable you are, in the water? Do you like a more stable canoe versus a little bit more efficient one? It's just about that balancing act.
So it really pays to go to a place like Rutabaga where you have people who understand the various types of activities that can be involved with canoeing and kayaking and can give you good advice.
You want to go someplace where people actually use the product. That's the important thing, and where you can try things out. And there's lots of places that are like that.
Bob in Wauwatosa, your turn. Hi, Bob.
Hi, guys. Great substitute guest today, I must say.
It saved me from accounting. Thank you.
Darren, I'd like you to please comment on the qualities of a kayak versus a good canoe in terms of overall usability in different waters, and a specific on the comparison, is a solo kayak faster, generally speaking, assuming you pick one that's kind of speedy, is it faster than a speedy solo canoe?
That's a really hard question to answer, so I'll duck it. what I'll tell you is this. Kayaks, all things considered, are more efficient than canoes. It's because you've got a two-bladed paddle and the ability to stroke on both sides. So just the actual stroke itself is more efficient. What I often tell people is that kayaking is kind of like jogging or rollerblading, and solo canoeing is kind of like ballroom dancing. They're both aerobic activities. One's just a little bit more, cerebral, if you will.
Mm-hmm. Well, on the speed question, what if I use a kayak paddle in my fairly narrow solo canoe?
Then you will go fast.
Does that work pretty well?
It works quite well, yeah. You will find you get a lot wetter because that's one of the downsides. I just produced and released a solo canoe instructional DVD because there wasn't one out there. It's the only reason I did it. And the thing I talked about in there is there are tools that are appropriate for different things. So if you paddle small, twisty, turny creeks, a small kayak will work great if the water is all the way open. If you run into a log jam, getting in and out of a kayak on a steep, muddy riverbank with a log in front of you is a little more difficult than getting in and out of a canoe.
Rivers like the Baraboo?
Well, here's a great example. I just paddled the upper stretch of the Sugar last Friday from Attica to Albany. And we were paddling along, and all of a sudden there's a tree that's about 18 inches off the water. And so I just kind of crawled down in my boat and laid down in it and floated under the tree. Now, in a kayak, I wouldn't have the room to do that. And if I wanted to climb out over the log and just let my canoe slide underneath me, getting back in would be a lot easier. So a lot of folks buy kayaks when they really should be looking at solo canoes. And that's because the learning curve for a kayak is pretty steep. You can be in it and going straight really quickly. In a solo canoe, not so much. So it takes a little more effort. But the tool itself is actually more appropriate long term.
Can I ask one more quickie?
Sure.
Could you give us some guidelines on how to take it? We happen to have a very seaworthy, it's a 16.5-foot canoe. Mm-hmm. And we'd like to do some canoeing on the Great Lakes. Can you advise us on three or four ways, besides putting a cover on the canoe, to most safely canoe along the shores of the Great Lakes? And then I can hang up.
Okay.
Okay. Well, you took away my number one suggestion, and that's to put a cover on it. That does make the boat more seaworthy. I mean, there's no reason you can't paddle a canoe on the Great Lakes. The thing you need to watch out for is weather, prevailing winds, things like that. If there's an onshore wind, there's going to be wind and waves and chop, but you're going to be blowing onshore if you dump, right? So it's one of those things that's just kind of difficult. As long as the conditions are favorable, there's no reason you can't go out and paddle. It just depends on your skill level. It depends on how quickly the weather changes. And, you know, in the Great Lakes area, weather changes fairly quickly. You know, the water is cold, so you need to be careful that you're not getting in over your head as far as, you know, water temperature, even on, you know, Lake Superior, even in the middle of the summer, is in the 40s. So if you're dressed for immersion and have the skills you need, there's no reason you can't paddle a canoe on the Great Lakes. Especially in the more sheltered areas, like, you know, the Michigan side of Green Bay, when there's a northwest wind, is pretty calm. Mm. I've paddled a canoe up there before. So, again, it just depends on the prevailing winds. It depends on what's happening with the weather. It depends on your skills. So it's one big depends, I suppose.
Thanks, Bob. Chance in Onalaska, your turn next. Hi.
Hi, how's it going? I grew up in Puerto Rico. I've been surfing since I was 7 years old, and I ended up getting transferred over here to Wisconsin through the military, and when I got out, I kind of got stuck here due to some kind of awkward circumstances, and I ended up picking up kayaking. I mean, I did it when I was a kid, but I didn't really think about doing it much in the La Crosse area.
Right.
And I picked it up. I bought my first kayak up here in Open Top, and I just bought a second one, and I'd have to say that everybody that I've ever taken out kayaking, especially on the Open Tops, they feel a lot more comfortable in them because, you know, you can tip over and they don't fill up with water. And I actually wanted to plug my website. I got a page on Facebook called Generation K. It's where anybody who kayaks and canoes and stuff like that can get on and share stories and pictures and places where to go kayaking around the Wisconsin area. But I have to say that, I don't know, I think kayaking is what saved me being here in Wisconsin. It's actually what's keeping me here. I stay here all summer and kayak, and during the winters I take off and go surfing.
Uh-huh. Darren, it sounds like an idyllic life, doesn't it?
Yeah. I actually grew up in Southern California surfing and moved to Wisconsin because I fell in love with a girl from Wisconsin. And I had a similar story. Kayaking and canoeing basically saved me from a life of being a landlubber. And I understand the appeal, and so I'll jump on Facebook and grab his webpage and put it on ours. That's really cool.
Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate it,
awesome.
Chance. Mary Ann in Oshkosh, your turn. Hi.
Hi. On the trip home from the library, I was listening, and you were talking about fishing out of a canoe, and you said it's a new sport. Well, 44 years ago, when I met my husband, he had a 17-foot Alumacraft, and he took me fishing on lakes around Milwaukee area, and then for our honeymoon, we took the canoe and went fishing in Canada on the big lake. So it's really not a new sport. It's an old sport, I think, and it was fun. I really enjoyed it. We still have the canoe, and we've taken our girls who are now in their 30s out when they were growing up.
Well, everything that's old is new. That's true.
Yep. That was, I think more not being new so much as being sort of renew and refound.
Yeah, well, exactly. And kayaks really haven't been around in the form they're in for very long. Canoes are timeless. But kayak fishing is relatively new just because the kayak type that works best for fishing hasn't been around for very long.
Thanks, Mary Ann. Nathan in Milwaukee, your turn. Hi.
Hey, Larry and Derry. How are you guys doing today?
Good.
Good. I just wanted to first comment and say how wonderful an experience I had at Rutabaga. Your sales staff there is very, very gracious and helpful in picking out a kayak. Quick question. My friend would like to buy a composite kayak, but is a little afraid of putting a hole or denting it. How hard is it to repair something like that? Because it's kind of a lot of money to get into. How hard is it to repair something like that if something happens?
I think the better question is how hard it is to put a hole in it. And the answer is really, really hard. And it is easy to repair. Repairing fiberglass is easy. But I've paddled kayaks in surf where I'd you know come off a wave and purl the bow and hit the bottom and hit a rock and I think oh there's going to be a big hole and you get out there and there's a little chip in the gel coat. So they're very, very tough boats.
Excellent. And I just wanted one more comment. You guys put on a great show over there at Canucopia. It's a wonderful experience, and it's a great resource to have. I really appreciate it. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thanks a lot for calling. And you have I went to your website, which is rutabaga.com, and I've got that up, and you've got all kinds of clinics and events and outdoor adventures, all kinds of things going on.
Yeah, we're kind of busy right now. I'm a little bit ahead of trying to get ahead of it because I'm leaving in 10 days for Alaska. Going kayaking up on the Lecompte Glacier and Stikine River and catching some fish and getting a vacation for the first time in about 4 years. So this is
good for you. Kelly in Green Bay, comment from you.
Hi, yeah, I love the show and love the canoe and kayak. I was recently traveling through the airport in Minneapolis, and they had a display. It was a Hobie kayak.
Yep.
And it had like paddle rudders on the bottom. I just signed on, so I wasn't sure if you discussed them. But what do you know about those?
That's called a Mirage Drive. That's a system from Hobie that's exclusive to Hobie. The guys that invented this thing are rocket scientists. They basically mimic penguin flippers, so they're not like propellers. They go back and forth, and they're run by remember you had those little what do they call fire engines when you're a kid, where you push the pedals back and forth,
right?
And you go forward. It's the same kind of motion. You pedal instead of in a circle, you pedal back and forth, and they're very, very efficient. We just put a customer in a boat last week, and he's on his way down the Mississippi with one. And we just sent him some parts because he ran into a log and dinked it up pretty good. So he's got a spare drive now. But they're very, very nice. If you like to fish, especially, because you can have both hands free and just kind of cruise along at trolling speed. But we found a lot of people like them for sort of a full-body workout, too.
Hmm. Interesting. Thanks, Kelly. Thanks very much for calling. And, Darren, thank you so much. I'm going to tell people to go to the website, rutabaga.com, and take a look at everything you've got there, and thanks again. And when you get back from Alaska, we're going to have you on again and talk about that adventure.
Great. Well, thanks for letting me fill in on short notice. I appreciate it.
Thanks, Darren. Darren Bush, co-owner of Rutabaga of Madison. It's the largest paddle sports shop in the world. And again, you can go to Rutabaga, R-U-T-A-B-A-G-A, rutabaga.com, and take a look at their website. Coming up, we're going to be talking Macintosh computers and accessories with Joe Rhodes, self-employed Macintosh support specialist who resides in Madison. Stay with us. I'm Larry Mueller here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.